is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation. Mystery Hour with James O'Brien.
3 minutes after 12 is the time you're listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where Mystery Hour gets underway. A weekly opportunity to achieve the sort of satisfaction not ordinarily available anywhere else on your radio dial. The way it works is this. You have a question, a conundrum, a query. Can I keep that up? I know that query doesn't actually begin with a C, but alliteration depends on the sound that you make. So a question, a conundrum, a query, a quisition? Quiz? I don't know. Shut up. Just get on with it. All right. If you've got a question that needs an answer, you've no idea what the answer is, but you know there must be an answer, give me a call, ask the question. Someone listening will know the answer. And somehow, in that very simple equation, from that very simple equation, magic will often emerge. It's not really about the destination, is it? It's about the journey. It's about travelling hopefully. If you hear somebody else ask a question to which you know the answer, then you have to ring in and answer it. Otherwise, your radio will blow up. 4 minutes after 12 is the time. 0345 606 0973 is the number that you need. Try not to be boring. Yeah, I know, pot kettle. And that's it, really, isn't it? I mean, I sometimes issue a guarantee that you will laugh out loud at least once between now and 1 o'clock. I'm happy to leave that on the board, but there are no refunds if I fail to deliver. And I think this one is copper-bottomed. You will know more by 1 o'clock than you do now. Although I take no responsibility whatsoever for how valuable the new knowledge you accrue might be, or indeed how long you manage to remember it for. Shall we start with Bob in Barnet? I think we should. Bob, question or answer?
A question, please, James.
Carry on, Bob.
My question is,
yes.
You see crossbred dogs and cats, mongrels, for want of a better word.
You do? I've got a cavapoo, would you believe, Bob? A little cavapoo? Yeah.
Exactly. But do you ever see a crossbreed robin and a sparrow, or a blackbird and a starling? And if not, why not?
Ooh.
You get two ducks, you take a duck and a drake, and they look totally different, but they know that one's the other one that they need to breed with, but why don't they mix it up sometimes?
Given that, I think you can breed a horse with a zebra, can't you?
Yeah.
And what are they called? Ligers, a lion and a tiger.
Yeah, exactly.
But so birds, I mean, I think we probably know that the answer is no, because if the answer was yes, we'd be able to think of examples off the top of our head. So we might even add a why to proceedings. Why do birds crossbreed? If not, why not? I like that a lot. What prompted the question?
I wondered it for a long time. And someone was telling me about a, they'd bought a cabochon or a dog, and I thought,
why can't you do it with birds? 6 minutes after 12 is the time. Thank you, Bob. A nice question. For those of you who are interested in the minutiae of my daily existence and who witnessed quite a traumatic moment on the programme not long ago when I described witnessing a heron taking a very, very, very freshly born duckling out of the pond near my house, I think the heron's got all of them. And the really bad news is that the moorhens have just had chicks as well, and they're on the other side of the island, and I don't know what to do about it. I can't interfere. This must be like David Attenborough in the Serengeti. If I could, I'd like to chase the heron away, because the moorhens are even smaller than the ducklings. Flipping herons. I really admired herons. It's all gone a bit Partridge, hasn't it? Yeah. But I loved herons when I first sort of encountered them, because they look like dinosaurs. They're magnificent creatures, and if you ever see one in flight, it's like there's a pterodactyl going over your head. But seeing those scissor-like beaks come down on a tiny little duckling and then realising that the mummy and daddy duck were... I hadn't got a hope in hell of defending the other ducklings from herons. And now I've checked. I haven't seen the ducklings since that day. And now the moorhens have hatched. Yeah, all right. Maybe that wasn't quite as scintillating as I... Or maybe you had to be there. Rob, from Bob to Rob. Rob's in Peterborough. Rob, question or answer?
James,
yes.
You've put me off with the moorhens now.
Oh, it's a sad one, isn't it, Rob?
It's awful.
What can you do about it, though? It's nature red in tooth and claw, mate. You can't interfere.
No, I guess not, but it doesn't make it easier for you.
It really doesn't. It's a nasty old world.
No, I've got a pet blackbird this year.
Have
and I
you
found
really?
One of its feathers.
Oh.
I'd say this year it could...
Oh, who knows?
It joined last year in lockdown.
Yeah.
Its name's Tess. It's got distinctive white tail feather.
Yeah. And it comes to visit you, does it? Does she?
Yeah, she sort of knows. She gets fed.
Oh, that's nice.
That's it. But she lives
somewhere else. I think she lives next door, but
okay.
That's fine.
Yeah. Can you remember why you rang in? Doesn't matter. I've enjoyed the chat.
Yeah, there was a cricket, James. I've been watching the game for 50 years, and LBW, if the ball pitches outside the leg stump, you cannot be given out, despite the fact that it's going to hit the wicket.
Yeah.
And nobody, it's just taken as read that that is the case, but why? It's going to hit the wicket. It's hit the batsman's leg. He should be out.
Is it only on the leg stump, if it pitches outside the off stump?
I think with the off stump, it's more if the batsman's, if it's hit the batsman outside the line.
Yeah.
And if he's attempting to play a shot. But
so if you're coming right arm round the wicket and you're throwing it at a diagonal that is clearly going to smash the middle stump out of the ground, but it hits the pad
out.
Just 2 inches outside leg stump, the umpire will give it as not out.
Absolutely. So if you imagine if it's a left-handed bowler...
Is it because... Yeah.
...going over the wicket...
Of course.
...it's even harder for it.
Yeah, that's a great point.
But I just don't know why. It's just... That's
no, let's find out. I like it. It's a great question. Thank you, Rob. No, I really do. And I give my love to Tess as well next time she flutters into view. 9 minutes after 12 is the time. From Rob to Ray. Ray's in Malden. Ray, question or answer?
Oh, hello, James.
Hello.
I'd love to know why we can find a vaccine for COVID within a few months.
Yeah.
And yet we struggled for forever to find a vaccine for the common cold. Why?
Yeah, I mean, possibly they're not looking for it quite as urgently because it doesn't do anything like as much damage, do you think?
I mean, it causes a lot of children to have time off of school and school teachers and
I think it's a virus as well. Is it a rhinovirus, the common cold, I think? I don't know the technical term. So, yeah, I mean, the speed with which they've conjured up a coronavirus vaccine does sort of, you're quite right, it does sort of make you wonder why they still haven't found a cure for the common cold, or at least a vaccine for the common cold. Well, we'll find out what the answer is. I wouldn't be surprised if it's something to do with urgency.
Okay.
No, it can't be that, because they've been looking for the cure for the common cold since the 50s, so 60-odd, 70 years. All right, yeah, I like that.
Okay.
Come on, scientists. You've come up with a vaccine for the coronavirus. Why wasn't the lowly cold? 0345 6060973. Lewis is in Staines. Lewis, question or answer?
Question, please, James.
Carry on.
Who owns the riverbank?
Which one?
I'm in Staines, so it's the River Thames, but it could be any river. Me and my wife were walking our dogs the other day. Lovely little stretch of towpath.
Yeah.
Some of the riverbank is neat, mowed, tidy. Some of the riverbank is overgrown with nature, bursting with greenery everywhere.
Hmm.
So I sort of said, why do you think they've cut certain bits? And my wife said, the council's done it. I was like, why isn't it all done?
So to clarify the question, you're talking about the bits that are clearly not privately owned.
Yes.
Because we know some fancy pants have houses that run down to the river side.
All be so lucky.
Absolutely. If I can't have a moat in my next house, the least I want is a riverside property. But I'll dream on, Lewis.
We can all dream about it, James,
exactly,
can't we?
Exactly.
So if the towpath is running along the river, who is responsible for all of that bit of grass, that bit of bank that's on the other side of the towpath, next to the river? Because some of it is kempt and some of it is unkempt.
Yeah, all right. I mean, it might just be concerned locals or people who have the house behind the bit of the riverbank that is not theirs, but they keep it under...
And that would be fine for me.
Yes,
that would be fine. But we've been discussing this for 3 days now and we don't have the answer.
You need a proper answer. How come? Yeah, all right. Who's in charge of the public thoroughfare bits of a riverbank? Who owns them? 0345. Or indeed has responsibility for keeping them spick and span. 0345 6060973. Alex is in Nottingham. Alex, question or answer?
Answer, James.
Carry on, Alex.
So it's the gentleman who asked about breeds of birds and compared to the breeds of dogs. So he's actually getting confused between species and breed. All our dogs are of the same species,
yes.
Therefore they can interbreed and they have different physical characteristics. Whereas birds are all, they're classified as certain species, so a robin, a magpie, that sort of thing. So we've bred dogs over 10,000 years to have different physical traits, so they've become we've had different subsets of breed. Same with cows, sheep, that sort of thing.
So we've created crossbreeding. What about crows? There's lots of different magpies and jays. Why can't they? Am I sounding stupid? chickens do, don't they? Chickens can crossbreed. One chicken and another.
Yeah, so there will be different breeds of.
But again, that's human intervention, again, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. So that's all about the physical characteristics, but there'll be certain attributes that make them a particular species. And what makes them species is the fact that they can, the same species, that they can interbreed. So when you talk about, a liger, a cross between a tiger and a lion, although they technically can mate and produce an offspring, that offspring is not fertile, which means they are not of the same species.
Right. Okay, I didn't know that. So the short answer is no, they can't crossbreed.
No. Yeah.
Round of applause.
Exactly.
Round of applause. Hang on, come back. Qualifications, please.
I'm a veterinary surgeon.
Round of applause for Alex, please.
Thank you.
Lovely stuff. I like that. 14 after 12, squeezing another one. Phil's on the Wirral. Phil, question or answer?
It's a question, James.
Carry on, Phil.
It's a summertime poser. Every single year, it kind of comes back and bothers me. I go from meeting to meeting, parking my car in often hot, sunny places.
Yes.
When I come back to the car and it's red hot, the steering wheel's red hot, the seat's red hot, and there's a bottle of water I don't really drink because it's nearly boiling.
Yes.
I always reach for my aerosol deodorant for a quick squirt of confidence under the armpits before the next meeting.
Is it Lynx Africa?
It's not. I'm a right guard man, if I can say.
You're a right guard man,
right guard unperfumed.
Right guard unperfumed. There it is, yes. Yorkshireman, he said. That's absolutely right. None of that.
I've not progressed to show.
None of that fancy stuff for me, son. None of that fancy perfume nonsense. Carry on.
Why is it that in that moment, the sweet relief of the aerosol is cold?
Yes, why does it all come out cold? It's hydrofluorocarbons, isn't it?
It's CFC-free, I know that. It's always puzzled me. However hot everything else is...
Because it's pressurised inside, so that would be like a thermos flask staying. I don't know why I'm talking. I'm making this up as
I go. It's
got
to be something to do with physics, but I kind of ducked out at O-level grade C in 1986.
It's not wind chill factor, is it? Because it's coming out.
It?
I don't know. It's
quick.
A good question. Why? And I have to be careful how you say aerosol on the radio.
Yeah, well, I'm not a ball or stick man.
So, why does the aerosol always come out cold, even if it's in a really, really hot environment?
Yeah, it's. I'd love to know the answer.
You're on. I'll try and find out for you, Phil. Thank you very much indeed. Well, I forgot to tell you. I think we might have solved one mystery from earlier in the week. I don't know if you were listening yesterday when we discussed calls for the government to stop publishing the daily figures with regard to coronavirus. I saw a graph today that I had to do a double take. I've done loads of double takes during the course of this pandemic, and sometimes I've wondered whether I've been looking at the graphs the wrong way up, and sometimes I think perhaps I have. And then, of course, you talk about death rates and death tolls, and then you read the small print and you realise it's for countries that have populations of more than 20 million. So although we were for a while at the top of that table, we were never at the top of the table that included countries with populations of less than 20 million. But this graph here appears to show, and it's Financial Times, it's not, off your Auntie Doris's Facebook page, that the United Kingdom is currently recording more new cases of coronavirus than the whole of the European Union put together. Which perhaps solves the mystery of why Ian Dunkin' Donuts was calling upon the government yesterday to stop publishing the figures in the way that they are currently published. I just thought I'd share that with you in case you're in a good mood. In case you were too cheerful, I thought that might drag you down a notch or two. 20 minutes after 12, Mystery Hour continues. Questions that still need answers. Just to add to Alex the vet's answer about birds, because crossbreeding in other creatures is largely human in origin. It's human husbandry. Humans that want to make, chickens that lay more eggs or cows that produce more milk or dogs that are cute. For reasons. It has been known, someone's told me that a goldfinch and a canary can breed, and breeders will do it because of the song that results coupled with the appearance, but it's very, very rare and it never happens in the wild, I think, is to complete the answer. I've had quite a few ornithologists getting in touch, and indeed Jason in Putney, who is the mate of an ornithologist, which counts as a qualification as far as Mystery Hour is concerned. So 21 minutes after 12, we've done that. Why is there no cure for the common cold, brackets, given that they found a vaccine for coronavirus so quickly? Why can you never be given out LBW if the ball pitches outside the leg stump, even if it's clearly going to be smashing the centre stump bang out of the ground? Who owns the riverbank, the bits that aren't, you know, attached to houses? And why do aerosols, why are they always so freezing, even when they've been sitting in a hot place, even when everything else in the room is red hot? Tom's in Birmingham. Tom, question or answer?
Question, please, mate. How are you?
Pretty good, thank you, mate. Go on.
Good. Why is it when you plough a field, however far inland you are, it attracts hundreds of seagulls?
Worms.
Yeah, but why are they? Yeah, but where they come from? So I live in Birmingham now, but I come from a farm in Devon. We were miles and miles away from sea. So where? How do they know? They're miles and miles away. How do they know we're ploughing the field?
Oh, I see. So not why are they there? They're there for the worms. Where did they come from? I mean, seagulls aren't confined to the sea anymore.
No. I know, because we get them in Birmingham. And we're like,
and they usually they like rubbish dumps and stuff like that, don't they? They're all flying around, Tom. They're all flying off in different directions, right? And then one of them sees a tractor that's ploughing a field and gives a specific squawk, or goes back and tells its mates, and then they all pile in.
But you never see them. We never see them on the farm. You never see a seagull. Ever. Not that you ever see one in passing, but then as soon as you plough the field, hundreds. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. So the question is, where do they come from?
Yeah, I get you what you mean. They're there for the worms when they get there, but how do they know it's happening?
Where do they come from and how do they know?
Yeah, basically.
03456060973 is the number you need. I quite like that question. It teaches me to be a smart ass. I said to Keith, when I saw that one on the board, I said, that's a shoo-in for a round of applause, that is. And Keith wasn't sure we should even put you through because it was such an obvious answer. But you weren't asking about why are they following the tractor through the ploughed field. That's for their dinner. The question is, where the hell do they come from? And how do they know that there's dinner on the table? Good question, that. Dave's in Horsham. Dave, question or answer?
Answer, James.
Carry on, mate.
It's the common cold.
Oh, yes.
The common cold isn't one illness. It's a description of symptoms of scratchy throat, cough, fever. It's caused by hundreds of different viruses, mainly rhinovirus, but some coronavirus. The answer to why we don't have a cure for it is that there's several answers to that. One is it doesn't kill you. It's annoying. So to develop a vaccine takes usually many years and many billions of pounds. When you develop it, someone's got to buy it.
Yeah.
And if you try and sell the virus, sell something for something that's non-fatal or non particularly harmful, there's no market for that. And secondly, they mutate the whole time, just like we're seeing all the variants of the coronavirus. So if you're dealing with 200 different viruses that all are mutating constantly, you're on a loser to begin with. The reason we have a coronavirus vaccine so quickly is that people have tried multiple times over the years to build vaccines to this type of virus. So you're not starting from a dead stop. You're starting from other people's research. And all of a sudden, every pharmaceutical company on the planet was focused on one specific virus with one DNA RNA strain.
So curing the cold, there would be no such thing as a cure for the common cold, because there is no such thing as the common cold.
It's like saying we're looking for a cure for cancer. It's too generic. It's too...
Because if we ever did find cures, they would be specific to the type of cancer you were treating.
Precisely.
Okay, I think that's pretty clear. If we had unlimited funds, I mean, if the common cold in its myriad forms was killing people at a rate of knots, is it feasible that science, scientists, pharmaceutical companies would come up with a cure or a vaccine?
Well, the answer to that is the flu.
So, yes.
The flu,
yes, but it would change it, but the goalposts would potentially move every season.
They move every year. And so every year there's a meeting of something like SAGE, who decide what's the most likely strains that are prevalent this year, and the vaccine is then developed to go after those strains, and it is variably successful.
Qualifications?
I'm a GP. Our local PCN has been running the vaccine centre, and we get this question a lot.
Round of applause for Dave.
Thank you.
Nicely done. Can I ask? Oh, no, I probably shouldn't. You know, it's very hard to get an appointment at the moment, Dave.
It is.
So Can I have a quick word?
Yeah.
Is that so? I've got a funny little lump on my hand, like a little nodule.
Send me a picture, James.
No, it doesn't. You can't see it. You can just feed it, feel it. Should I see the doctor? It's not going away. I've tried to rub it and stuff, but it's mildly painful. It's playing havoc with my forehand.
Is it smooth?
As in, it's under the surface. It feels like it's a nodule on a sort of tendon or something like
that. Yeah, it sounds like a ganglion.
A ganglion, yeah.
Hit it with the family Bible.
You think it would just be squishable?
That was the old-fashioned treatment.
It's quite small. It's about the size of a... What's quite a small thing?
Like
you know the mini Maltesers that you put on ice cream sometimes? It's about that size.
Yeah.
Do you think I'd just give it a squish?
Give it a whack.
All right. Now?
No.
Dave, thank you. Have another round of applause in response for your professional expertise. 27 after 12. Catherine's in Bedford. Catherine, question or answer?
Answer.
Carry on.
Who owns the riverbank?
Indeed.
It's the landowner adjacent to the riverbank, whoever it's called, the riparian landowner under the Land Drainage Act 1991. The landowner either side up to the centre line of the river owns the riverbank.
Well, then how come they let that? Why are they required to let people walk on it then, and in other areas they're not?
That comes under public rights of way, so yes. Slightly different department from me.
Okay.
But they would have permissive powers and such like to allow people public rights of way across the land or not, depending on the land, what the land's used for.
So when I walk up the towpath, which is what the question was based upon, the bit I can walk up is owned by the property adjacent to it, so the pub. If I walk in front of a pub and it's got outdoor seating, the pub actually owns that bit of the riverbank.
They do, yes.
Oh, it's like rambling, even though they have to let the public walk on it.
Yeah, so there'll be a public right of way across it, but the actual soil under the footpath is still the landowner, and then up to the centre of the riverbank, up the centre of the river.
Oh, I love that. And that would answer the original question about why some of it is well kept and some of it isn't.
Yep, absolutely.
Qualifications?
I'm a flood risk officer for Cambridgeshire County Council.
That'll do nicely, won't it? What does the average day involve, Catherine, if you don't mind me asking?
Such
thing as an average
day. No, after Christmas, when the whole county flooded, basically, it involves a lot of investigation of what flooded and why and what we need to do about it. So a lot of it comes back to that riparian ownership, because the ditches and river... Lots of people don't realise that they're responsible for the ditch or the river, so they don't clear it out and then everything floods.
Oh, well, you live and learn. What a beautiful answer. Have a round of applause on me.
Thank you.
These are the jobs, you know, the people whose work actually makes life better for all of us, but who you barely notice the existence of until you really, really need to. I'm fascinated by that sort of world. Can we squeeze in one more? Dave's in Islington. Dave, question or answer?
Question, James.
Carry on, Dave.
Yeah, what it is, I want to know if you can smell in your sleep.
Well, what have you been up to?
Well, no, we was in bed with a girlfriend like the other night.
Yeah?
And I had a bit of wind.
Oh, and you woke her up with it,
and,
did you?
And she was getting the hump, so she said, why don't you go out of the room and do that?
Yeah.
Smelling a bit.
Yeah. She had wind.
No, I did.
Oh, I was glad to say, this wouldn't be a very chivalrous...
And then I said, well, why don't you go to sleep and then you won't smell it?
Yeah. And she said, I can't go to sleep because my nostrils are on fire.
Well, no, she was nearly off, so...
Oh, okay.
And I thought, yeah, that would be a fair thing. And then she said, well, I can still smell him.
Oh, Lord.
And I said, well, no, you can't.
This is a very indelicate topic of inquiry, David. I feel sorry for your partner.
Well, we've been arguing about it the last 2 days.
So can you smell in your sleep? You know you can sometimes because you wake up, sort of, you have that last bit of dream, don't you? And like, bacon or coffee.
Yeah, but is it a smell? I don't know if it's a smell.
No, I don't know.
I mean,
how
I know
we
you can. Yeah, noise will wake you up, but.
Yeah, but I think a smell can wake you up, probably. I mean, smoke? Oh, no. Oh. All right, you're on. I'll find out for you. But, you know, be a bit more gallant and chivalrous in future, Dave, please, if you would.
At the Bank of Antandek, mortgages are on the menu.
I was in the chippy last night, and it hit me.
Go on.
We should give all our new mortgage customers £1,000 of spuds,
potatoes.
Yeah, jackets, roasties, dolphin wires. I mean, what's not to love?
Hey, yeah, we could call it
Mashback. Genius.
Meanwhile, at Santander, they're giving their customers £1,000 cash back on selected first-time buyer mortgages. See what's possible at Santander.
Lending subject to status and criteria. Cashback given on completion and repayable if mortgage closed within 2 years. Offer can be withdrawn. Your home may be repossessed if you do not keep up repayments on your mortgage.
We know about common colds. We know about riverbanks. Just put my teeth in, make sure I say this right. We need to find out about aerosols, seagulls, or perhaps the sea element of that word is the misleading bit. And can you smell stuff in your sleep? So why do aerosols create really, really cold output or air, gas, when I think that the answer is kind of obvious, but I don't have the knowledge to join the dots, even when it's in a really, really hot environment. Why can you not be given out LBW if the ball pitches outside the leg stump? How do seagulls, when seagulls are following tractors ploughing fields in pursuit of tasty morsels and worms, where did they come from? You never see them in that vicinity normally. And how did they know that dinner was being served? And can you smell in your sleep? 03456060973 is the number that you need. Ron's in Cheltenham. Ron, question or answer?
It's an answer, James.
Carry on.
To the aerosol question, why does it come out cold?
Carry on.
And it's to do with the law of conservation of energy, because when you press the button, the gas escapes, and so it gets kinetic energy. Okay, so energy through movement.
Yes.
And it's got to equalise its energy somehow or other, so it decides to go cold, and then the net amount of energy in that stream of gas remains the same as it was at the beginning of the process. And it's a law in physics called Bernoulli's theorem.
So it's all because of the speed with which the gas emerges from the nozzle?
Yeah, that means that volume of gas has attained some energy through movement.
Yeah.
And the only way that the law of conservation of energy can work is by reducing the temperature.
Wow. So it's got nothing to do with the makeup of the gases inside the can?
No, you can... I covered this in the fluid mechanics module of a civil engineering degree course, and it works for all fluids.
Well, I never... Keith got that right, would you believe, Ron, off air?
Yeah, the other way around is you might notice if you're blowing up a car tyre,
yeah,
it gets hot. That's the reverse process.
He's right, actually. And well, I don't blow up car tyres on a regular basis, but if I'm blowing up my bicycle tyre with the old-fashioned pump rather than...
It gets really hot
at the end, doesn't it, on the connector? Well, yeah. There you go. That's absolutely fascinating. I don't fully understand, but that's to do with the speed of my brain, not with the quality of your answer. And you've already told us what your qualifications are. You're a trained engineer.
Yeah, well, I was.
Well, you still are.
True.
You might not be doing the engineering anymore, but you remain a trained engineer forever, Ron.
Yeah, indeed, you can't get rid of that.
Get rid of that. Round of applause for Ron.
Thank you.
Great work. Oh, I like that a lot. I got that completely wrong. It's nothing to do with Sir Keith. My apologies. Well played, sir. John's in Marden in Kent. John, question or answer?
I've got an answer for you, James.
Carry on, John.
But first of all, I can use my real name this time.
Go on.
You were very kind to join me on my goodbye programme last year. Do you remember?
Of course I do, yes.
Through producer Michael. Yeah.
Absolutely. So just tell everybody else.
What?
Your real name.
Oh, I see. John, well, no, he's John in Kent.
He's been all modest now. He's a big BBC legend. John in
Kent,
BBC Kent legend. John, carry on.
You're very kind. Yeah, right. The reason you can't be out LBW when the ball pitches outside leg stump is to stop negative bowling. It's very difficult to hit the ball when it's going down the leg side of a batsman. So to stop it, they said, well, you can bowl there if you like, but you can just pad it away because you can never be given out LBW. That's the reason. The other slight reason is because of body line in the 30s when the England bowlers, Harry Larwood, was bowling short pitch stuff to the Australians outside the leg stump, and they could only play it round the corner where they had loads of fielders. So it was just considered ungentlemanly and negative bowling, so it's not allowed.
I mean, that's a surprising answer, John, because, I mean, it's tradition and gentlemanly conduct rather than anything... Yeah. Just run that the first bit by me again. Why would it be more unsportsmanlike on the leg side than the off side, for example?
It's easy to hit. It's how easy it is to hit the ball. If you ask any batsman, if the ball's going down the leg side, it's very difficult to chase it round the corner and get a bat on it. Some people do, but it is hard. So to stop negative bowling, they brought in this law to say you can bowl there if you like, but of course the batsman could just stick his pad in the way and knock it away with his pad and he can't be out.
So
to stop negative bowling.
Okay. Yeah. So I was looking at it from the wrong end of the pitch because I was thinking about it as being the batsman's issue, but it's actually to address the bowling issue. I know the answer to this, as indeed anyone who are you doing the drive time show now, or have you hung up your headphones completely?
I'm waiting to go around the world.
You are. So can I say? Yes. Can I tell people the story that you used to have because you were a BBC presenter of I think 25 years standing on Kent. 31. Sorry, look at 23 on the breakfast show.
Yeah.
There you go. You used to ring Mystery Hour and use a false name because you didn't want to get into trouble with your BBC bosses.
That's right.
That's one of my all-time favourite stories. I love that. In fact, I think, given as a mark of from one broadcasting legend to another, I'm only joking, you're the only legend here. I might give you a Ray Liotta, actually, seeing as here under your own name. And your qualifications are, John Warner, that you commentate on cricket as well as present radio shows.
Yeah, I commentate on cricket for 20 years, yeah.
I'm Ray Liotta, and you're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. If you build it, they will come.
There we go.
Love that. I'll have to download that now.
As you see, you're 31 years on the BBC, but your career's just peaked. Take care, John. It's a pleasure to talk to you, and enjoy the trip. When are you off? Has it been postponed because of lockdown?
Well, yeah, it keeps. I mean, I'll be going around the world when I can.
Yes.
I've been stifled by coronavirus, but there you go. I'll go when it's safe.
Well, bon voyage and good luck. What a lovely call. Thank you, mate. 12:40 is the time. He inherited a producer from me. That's how we made contact, and that's how the story emerged. Steve's in Lincoln. Steve, question or answer?
I've got a question.
Carry on, Steve.
My question is, when I pour myself a pint of beer, it gets a nice, thick, foamy head on it. But if I pour myself a pint of cola or lemonade, it doesn't, and I'm wondering why that is.
Molecules.
Molecules.
You're not going to let me get away with that, I hope.
Well, I thought it might be viscosity.
I don't think it would be viscosity, because Coke and beer have a similar viscosity, don't they?
You
don't think of one as being more or less viscous than the other. Size of the bubbles is what it's going to be. Because carbon is... all right, I'm having a crack at this. Keith, take that look off your face. Carbon dioxide is introduced to liquid in the context of soft drinks and Coca-Cola and lemonade. You take a liquid and you add the gas to it. Fermentation in a brew or in a beer, fermentation creates the gas through a chemical process. Therefore, and this is unfortunately where my slightly plausible sounding theory begins to sound a little bit more amateurish, therefore the bubbles are smaller. I bet that's right. I bet that's right, but I can't take it to the bank. It must be the difference between carbonating and fermenting and the size of the resulting bubbles or something.
Yeah, something to do with yeast, maybe. I'm not sure.
Yeah, yeast is part of the fermentation process, definitely, but it will be carbonating. If it's not carbonating versus fermenting in some way, shape or form, then, I don't know. I'll buy you a drink if our paths ever cross.
Sounds good
to me. All right, it's on the list. Why can you get a nice head on a pint of beer but not on a pint of Coke? 03456060973. Ross is in Shetland. Ross, question or answer?
Question, please.
Carry on, Ross.
On Scottish issued notes, it says pounds sterling, but on Bank of England notes, it doesn't. I'm just wondering why that would be the case. It might be nothing, but it might be.
Are you sure it doesn't? It definitely says sterling on a Scottish bank.
Yeah, I've got a Bank of Scotland note and it says £10 sterling. I've got a Royal Bank of Scotland note and it says £20 sterling.
Yeah.
And I have a Bank of England note and it just says £20.
How much is the Bank of England note worth?
£20.
You just said £20. I'm losing.
Yeah.
So you got 50 quid on you. You got 50 quid in your hand at the moment.
Well, I'm at the house, so it's okay.
It's like helping the kids with their homework, this. If Ross in Shetland had a £20 note from the Royal Bank of Scotland, a £10 note from the Bank of Scotland, and a £20 note from the Bank of England, how much money would... I'll find out for you. It might just be tradition, but there's quite a lot of people who are really into studying. Is it Newman? Is it called Newmanism?
If I was in England, the £20 note you kind of used, and the £10 note you kind of used, but the £20 would be okay, so I've got £20 on me.
I'm with you. I like it. I should find it. No, I'm with it. I get it. I'll try and get you an answer. Why does it say sterling on Scottish banknotes and not on English banknotes. 03456060973 is the number that you need. Mike's in Marlow. Mike, question or answer?
It's a question, James. When we watch the football, whoever's hosting cooks the food of the country that we're playing.
Who's we?
So we, our mates, bunch of mates. You know, somebody will host and somebody else will host know, and we go and watch the football, but we eat the food of the team we're playing. So if it's Italy, it's easy, isn't it? It has pasta, pizza, risotto, whatever.
I'd go nice to Baglioni if you want to mix things up a bit, Michael.
There you go. But...
Yeah.
Well, nobody knows what to cook because we're playing the Ukraine. Nobody.
It's borscht. The national dish of Ukraine is your question. What is the nearest thing?
Yeah.
What would it be if it was England, out of interest?
Well, we'd go for a roast, probably.
Yeah, or a full English, I suppose.
Yeah, or a full English, yeah.
I have to be careful what I say about breakfast.
Or an afternoon, we'd probably go for a
nice roast.
A big old roast.
Yeah, roast beef, really, because, I mean, that's the nickname that French people call us, isn't it? Les Rosbifs.
Roasted beef,
So the national dish of Ukraine, I imagine it might involve cabbage. I mean, are you sure you really want to find out? What if it's not very appetising?
Cabbage and radishes for some reason.
Radishes? Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well... Yep. Remind me not to come round yours on Saturday night.
Listen, I'm not hosting. Tommy's hosting.
Is it Tommy's turn?
He doesn't know what to do.
Get him a cabbage. Call it quits. We'll try. There will be somebody listening who hails from Ukraine. So hopefully they will ring in and tell us. It doesn't have to be like officially a national dish, because I don't think many countries have an official national dish. But Hungarian goulash, there you go. You've actually got the nationality in the title of the dish. But what would be a typical dish common to Ukraine? I love that question, actually. Roll on Saturday. I wonder how many people, if we get an answer, will end up serving it up. So three S's, seagulls, smell in your sleep for Dave, and Sterling. How do seagulls know that a farmer is ploughing a field, and where do they come from, given that you never see seagulls in that vicinity ordinarily? Can you smell in your sleep? 03456060973. Why do Scottish banknotes say sterling, but English banknotes don't? And finally, what's the national dish, or is there a national dish of Ukraine? Oh, and beer. Why can you get a nice head on a pint of beer, but none whatsoever on a pint of cola? That's only four more to answer. I think we could do it, but it's all down, as ever, on this programme. It's entirely down to you. Seagulls, smelling in your sleep, sterling, beer versus Coke, and what was the last one? Begins with... I've written down an N. Ukraine food. What would be a typical Ukrainian dish that Mike in Marlow, or rather, they're all going round Tommy's. It's Tommy's turn to host the football and indeed to cook a meal that is typical of England's opponents' national cuisine, in this case, Ukraine. Jonathan's in Chester. Jonathan, question or answer?
Oh, hello, James. It's a Stewart's inquiry, I'm afraid, on the aerosol question.
I'm not that surprised, to be honest with you, Jonathan. Go on, what do you want to say?
So the previous caller, the effect he described does exist. It's called the Joule-Thompson effect.
Yes.
But that's not what causes aerosols to be cold. So what you're actually emitting from an aerosol initially is droplets of a liquid. And the easiest way to think about this is to think about water boiling. So water boils at 100 degrees, and any more heat you add to that, it's not heating the water up, it's generating vapour. Right? So water cannot exist above 100 degrees atmospheric pressure. And the same principle is true of all chemicals. And in the aerosol is a mixture of chemicals, but it's probably easier to think of it as one, something, but let's call it isobutane, which is often used.
Yes.
And isobutane can't exist at atmospheric pressure as a liquid above about minus 9 degrees.
Yeah.
Right, so when that droplet of isobutane leaves the pressure of the can, when it goes to atmospheric pressure, it can't be a liquid anymore. Right, so it has to boil.
Yeah,
but the heat that it needs to boil comes from itself. It's called auto refrigeration.
Right.
Right. So instantaneously, it gives up temperature to give heat to boil itself. So it cools down, in theory, down to minus 9 degrees.
As soon as it comes out of the nozzle.
Exactly. As soon as it hits atmospheric pressure. Now, what's also happening at that time, more slowly, is it's absorbing heat from the air around it, which it's mixing with. in the aerosol nozzle. So it's, and then cooling that air. So it, when it hits you, it's not minus 9 degrees. It's a bit warmer than that because the air has mixed with it and it's created something halfway in between. You can actually see the effect happening. I wouldn't recommend anybody does this, but if you spray the aerosol onto a surface, you, you get some liquid sat there at that temperature.
And, you can and see it's freezing. You can almost burn yourself on it. It's
so cold.
Yeah,
exactly. That's why
so,
I recommend doing it.
Are you adding to the last answer or are you...
No, because the Joule Thomson effect doesn't exist because you're emitting... You're
well, it does exist, but not in the context of spraying an aerosol.
Exactly.
So, unfortunately, so Keith was wrong and I was right.
I didn't hear your...
No, I can't. That is outrageous. That's absolutely professional suicide.
I was too busy calling in.
No, fair enough. Keith just tried to cut you off. That's what was outrageous. Not you. Round of applause. Qualifications?
I'm a chemical engineer.
As opposed to a structural engineer, which is interesting, isn't it? Because that is this is chemistry rather than physics.
Yeah, it is. It's classic chemical engineering. Oh, yeah,
beautiful stuff. I've got such clever listeners. And that applies to the fellow who answered the question originally as well, as well as to you. Although on this occasion, the round of applause is yours.
Thank you.
Has anyone spotted the obvious blooper that has occurred in the course of the last 10 minutes? Or rather, the open goal that we've all spectacularly missed? Food associated with Ukraine? Anybody? Come on. Anyway, Niall is in Ukraine. Niall, what have you got?
I've got the answer. I think it'll probably associate borscht with Ukraine.
You think?
Yeah, well, I should hope so. It's what everybody and every family eats all over the place. I mean, there's other things, but the one that's most internationally known is borscht. You could also say things like pelmeni and vareniki, but people don't really know about them.
Well, you've missed the open goal as well. What about halupsi?
Yeah, they things like that. And haladiet. Vareniki, yeah. I said. Vareniki,
you did
I
say
said,
that. You did. Did you say bigos?
No, I didn't say them. No. But you've got loads of different things. The one that is the first thing you'll ask a Ukrainian person, they'll probably say borscht, which is a beetroot cabbage-based soup. So you're quite right about the cabbage.
I said borscht, actually, but I kind of just threw it away. Okay, so the open goal would be chicken Kiev.
Yeah, but I think that's more popular internationally than it actually is in Ukraine. And people, they don't eat it that much, but...
But Tommy's got to serve the lads. He doesn't want to serve them beetroot soup. He gives them a chicken Kiev and chips. They're all going to be laughing, aren't they?
Well, this is true. Absolutely. So go for chicken Kiev. Very easy.
But are you suggesting that if you were to go to Kiev and ask for a chicken Kiev, they wouldn't know what you were talking about?
Oh, no, I'm not. But if you go to other parts of Ukraine, you'll probably, if you ask for a national dish, they won't say chicken Kiev immediately. They'll say borscht.
They'd say
borscht. Or they'll say pelmeni or vareniki or something like that.
Qualifications? I'm asking Niall in Ukraine what his qualifications are. Telling us about the food in Ukraine, but I've got to go through the motions, mate. You know, it's all about the small print. Qualifications?
I live in Ukraine. I have Ukrainian family.
You sound Irish. How did you end up there?
Well, I'm Irish born in Chelmsford.
Good Lord, you've been around.
And you picked it up. That's unbelievable.
I'm a student of accents. I really love accents.
I know that.
Well, you listen to the pros. That was very Irish, the way you said no. I picked up on that. But your accent is a mixture of your meanderings, then.
Yes, absolutely.
I love that. Round of applause for Niall. It's close to a radiator.
Right. Thanks very much.
No, thank you. But there are a lot of people in Ukraine. So it's up to you, Mike. Tommy, rather. If Tommy's not even listening, Mike's going to report back. You could do borscht, which is a cabbage and beetroot soup, which I'm not going to lie. I don't think the lads are going to fancy that. And if you're watching it in your sitting room, mate, think about the upholstery. Think about Mrs. Tommy. She's not going to be very pleased if anyone spills beetroot soup in her sitting room. There's not going to be any... prospect of getting that out of the sofa, whereas a nice chicken Kiev, chips, maybe in a basket. Give it a 70s vibe. Everyone's a winner. This programme reaches parts, I've said it before and I'll say it again, that other programmes just cannot reach. Sam's in Hull. Sam, speaking of beer.
Hello, James. Thank you.
What have you got?
I've got the beer versus cola question.
Yes.
I've got the answer.
Go on then.
You'd like to know?
Yeah, of course I would. The suspense is killing me. Go on.
Okay, well, it's basically down to the gas used to push the liquid from the cellar or wherever the beer or the drink is held to the pump at the front of the bar. Coke and soft drinks and cider and some lagers will use 100% CO2. Things like Guinness, Worthington, Cream Flows, they'll use 70-30 gas. It's a mixture of nitrogen and CO2. And some other lagers will use 60-40.
Oh, I was completely wrong. It's got nothing to do with the gas being created in the drink. It's all about the gas that's used to serve it.
That's right. The nitrogen creates smaller, tighter bubbles that take longer to pop, if you like, and give a smoother, creamier mouthfeel. And the CO2 gives you a crispier, bubbly.
I should have known this, because if you're having it from a cask, then there's not much head on it at all, is there?
No, because they use an air compressor to use air to push it. So
rather than
no
introducing a gas. Well, you live and learn. And as you say, some lagers, or most lagers, you can't get anything like a sort of creamy head on it like you would with a Boddington's or a Guinness or a Tetley.
But, no, there used to be a Carling Premier that was sort of creamy, but that's gone by the by.
Was that the one with the massive... Sheila Fogarty's laughing at us. She doesn't understand how important this stuff is.
I really don't.
That's the one with the massive pump on the bar, wasn't it? The one that kind of tried to ape some of the European lagers.
Yeah, the pumps just kept getting bigger and bigger and sillier and sillier.
You're on. Qualifications?
I was, in a previous lifetime, a draft beer engineer. Used to install beer and soft drinks in pubs and bars.
And there it is. It's all about the gas that is used to get the drink out of the storage facility, barrel, bottle, call it what you will, vat, into the glass. Round of applause for Sam. Mike's in Maidvale. Mike, question or answer?
Answer.
Carry on.
It's concerning the beer. Glad to be involved in such a controversy, actually.
Well, it's a steward's inquiry. You should see what I said about Tim Henman on Twitter if you want to see a controversy at the moment. You're challenging the last answer, are you?
Yes, I am.
Oh, my days.
It's a combination of both the history of the liquid and the gas that's going into whatever container the froth or bubbles are being formed, and also the nature of the liquid. Because in the liquid, there can be, particularly in complex liquids such as beer, there's many molecular species that like to sit on the interface. They're what we call hydrophobic or hydrophilic.
Right.
And they like to sit, these molecules like to sit the interface between the gas and the liquid. And that stabilizes the bubbles. And the measure of how the stability of the bubbles is how long they take to collapse.
Yeah.
But the size of the bubble also comes into it, because the... So it's the history of the fluid coming in, the size of the bubble, but most importantly, it's the nature of the liquid and the.
You're both right. You're not rendering the last answer wrong.
No, I'm saying that it's part of the story.
Yeah, I like that. So you're like a double act. You're like Harry Maguire and John Stones in the middle at the back for England, aren't you, Mike? You and the last fella.
I like to think John Stones, really. Yeah. Maguire, I like.
Yeah, well, you can be either, you know, and then we'll let the other lad be the other one, whatever's left over at the end. What are your qualifications?
I'm a chemical engineer. Right. I used to lecture in foaming situations.
Foaming? You used to lecture in foaming situations?
Yes.
Oh, my days. Do you mind, Shields?
Joy.
I
love it.
Can I have another
10 minutes? You can have another 10 minutes with him.
You get one of these, Mike.
Yeah.
Hang on. Okay. Ray Liotta, and you're listening to James O'Brien on LBC.
Lecture.
If you build it, they will come.
Okay.
Thank you, mate. We'll talk again. That was like lightning. So they say lightning never strikes twice. It does on Mystery Hour. That's it from me another day. Back tomorrow morning at 10 with thank you to Sheila Fogarty for making room for that richly deserved Ray Liotta.